Part 3. The Great Panic. Along, India. I stand on the shore with Ajay Shah, looking out at the rusting wrecks of once proud ships. Since the government does not possess the funds to remove them, and because both time and elements have made their steel necks to useless, they remain silent memorials to the carnage this beach once witnessed.
They tell me what happened here was not unusual. All around our world, where the ocean meets the land, people trying desperately to board whatever floated for a chance of survival at sea. I didn't know what Along was, even though I'd lived my entire life in nearby Bhavnagar. I was an office manager, a zippy, white-collar professional from the day I left university. The only time I'd ever worked with my hands was to punch a keyboard, and not even that, since all our software went voice recognition. I knew Along was a shipyard, that's why I tried to make for it in the first place. I'd expected to find a construction site cranking out hull after hull to carry us all to safety. I had no idea that it was just the opposite. Along didn't build ships, it killed them. Before the war, it was the largest breaker's yard in the world. Vessels from all nations were bought by Indian scrap iron companies, run up on this beach, stripped, cut, and disassembled until not the smallest bolt remained. The several dozen vessels I saw were not fully loaded, fully functional ships, but naked hulks lining up to die. There were no dry docks, no slipways. Along was not so much a yard as a long stretch of sand. Standard procedure was to ram the ships up onto the shore, stranding them like beached whales. I thought my only hope was the half-dozen new arrivals that still remained anchored offshore, the ones with skeleton crews, and I hoped a little bit of fuel left in their bunkers. One of these ships, the Veronique Del Mar, was trying to pull one of her beached sisters out to sea. Ropes and chains were haphazardly lashed to the stern of the APL Tulip, a Singapore container ship that had already been partially gutted. I arrived just as the Del Mar fired up her engines. I could see the white water churning as she strained against the lines. I could hear some of the weaker ropes snap like gunshots. The stronger chains, though, they held out longer than the hull. Beaching the Tulip must have badly fractured her keel. When the Del Mar began to pull, I heard this horrible groan, this creaking screech of metal. The Tulip literally split in two, the bow remaining on shore while the stern was pulled out to sea. There was nothing anyone could do. The Del Mar was already at flank speed, dragging the Tulip's stern out into several hundred feet of water where it rolled over and sank within seconds. There must have been at least 1,000 people on board, packing every cabin and passageway and square inch of open deck space. Their cries were muffled by the thunder of escaping air.
Why didn't the refugees just wait aboard the beached ships, pull up the ladders, and make them inaccessible?
You speak with rational hindsight. You weren't there that night. The yard was crammed right up to the shoreline, this mad dash of humanity backlit by inland fires. Hundreds were trying to swim out to the ships. The surf was choked with those who didn't make it.